who will find fault with us for doing no more than we were sent to do, rescue our countrymen. I dare say there will be voices raised in the House, demanding to know why we have left a savage country in confusion and civil war. Which is how it was for centuries before we came, cries Charlie. And the Ethiopian can't change his skin, can he? He'll go murdering whether we're here or not. The chief's right, though, says Merriweather. There's bound to be an outcry, because we're not leaving a garrison to pacify the tribes and police the country. Oh, and distribute tracts to folk who were Christian before we were, as though Abyssinia were a country to be pacified and ruled with fewer than 10 divisions and a great civil power, which would call for an expenditure of many millions, far more than we have spent, and with no hope of return. Napier was smiling as he said it, but I wondered if some hint of censure had already reached him from home. They'd given him a free hand, and he hadn't stinted. "And if we were to occupy the confounded place, Mr. Gladstone would never forgive us," says Merriweather. "What, enlarge the empire? Bring indigenous peoples to subjection and exploit them for our profit? Rather not!" There was general laughter at this, and Napier said with his quiet smile that we must resign ourselves to being regarded as callously irresponsible or rapaciously greedy. Brutal indifference or selfish imperialism, those are the choices. As an old Scotch maidservant of my acquaintance used to say, "Ye canna de right for deen wrang." More laughter. And Charlie said, well, thank goodness at least no one could complain that there had been dreadful slaughter of helpless aborigines by the weapons of civilization. It wasn't our fault jolly old Theodore kicked the bucket, he added. Merriweather said thank goodness for that, and I could feel the uneasy silence of Napier and Speedy. No doubt it was out of consideration for me that Napier checked his mount until I was alongside, and then says cheerily, "You're very silent, Harry. Have you no philosophic reflections on the campaign? No views on what should or should not be done now that it's over?" I glanced back at the smoke rising from Magdala like some huge genie escaping from his bottle, and then at the long, dusty column of horse, foot and guns swinging down the defile, and I thought of that hellish, beautiful land and its hellish, beautiful people, of Yando's cage and the horrors of Gondar, of bandit treasure aswarm with scorpions, of the terrifying thunder of descent into a watery maelstrom, of a raving lunatic slaughtering helpless captives, of fighting women drunk on massacre, of a graceful she-devil aglow with love and ice-cold in hate. I was finally aware of the gently smiling old soldier waiting for an answer as we rode in sunlight down from Aragee. "My views, sir? Can't think I have many. Oh, I don't know, though. Wouldn't mind suggesting to Her Majesty's ministers that next time they get a letter from a touchy barbarian despot, it might save them a deal of trouble and expense if they sent him a civil reply by return of post." On which characteristically caustic note, the 12th packet of the Flashman papers comes to an end. That is the end of Flashman on the March. It was written by George MacDonald Fraser and read by Jonathan Keeble. This has been an ISIS audiobooks presentation. A previous title by this author, Black Ajax, is also available from ISIS. For further details of our extensive catalogue of audiobooks on cassette and CD, please call our free phone number 0800 731 5637.